Did you hear any UFO noises, Cassidy?
No.
Not a bit. My wife just barged into my recording room saying she heard UFO noises outside of our window.
Tell her to hide in a salt circle.
That's a good... Cassidy says hide in a salt circle. Isn't that demons?
I don't know. It probably works for other stuff,
too. Let me know if there's further developments in the alien story.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber on the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me again is my co-host from San Diego, California, Keith Foster.
Welcome to the Jabber on the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me, as always, is my co-host from Los Angeles, California, Cassidy Robinson.
Are you practicing for the one day when I ask you to do this without me?
No. I'm not doing this without you. Why would I ever do that?
You never know.
I know.
Or maybe what'll happen is one day I'll just say, you know what, you drive.
I wouldn't. It just wouldn't happen. There would just be no podcast.
It'd be like those times during the Comedy Project where they would have you host the show.
Whoa.
I'm not saying those are bad times or good times. I'm not saying anything about it.
I hosted the show plenty. I feel like you are saying something about it.
Just saying it isn't your natural role, exactly. Personally, as a performer, would you rather host a show, come out and MC and be like, hey, how's everyone doing? Blah, 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 blah. Or would you rather go in there and be characters and be funny and get to chew it up and all that stuff?
I mean, I would host my show. I'm not going to host your show.
That's all I'm saying.
What a weird way to start the show, Cass.
This week we're going to be talking about Deadpool 2.
Really weird energy to get going.
I think we're talking about Deadpool 2. We never actually discussed it. It was sort of just a foregone conclusion in my head.
Did anything else even open this weekend?
I'm sure something did, yeah, but nothing that I saw.
Yeah, I saw Deadpool 2.
Yeah, I assumed. And at the end of the program, we are also going to be reviewing Masterminds, which was the Netflix homework that you assigned me last week.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of stuff to talk about here at the top. We're not going to do our usual obey consume section, because we took a survey, on our Facebook page. If you're not following us on Facebook, you should at, facebook.com/jabberpodcast, where we post all of our news stories and episodes when they go up. And every once in a while, we ask questions directly to our listeners, which we did this week. I found an article from the AV Club about the worst movies a group of critics saw in the theaters. And I asked our listeners, what are the worst movies they saw in the theaters? And we actually got a pretty decent amount of responses on this, and at the end of this we'll give ours.
Sure. Yeah.
But let's just go through these and talk about these next time.
Be like, hey Keith, you should think of an answer to this question as well.
You did. You on Twitter, you posted like six things.
I know I did.
Which actually what I wanted to say was, Keith, don't do that so that we can have content for the show later.
I actually saved some.
Good.
So.
Good. I might be less prepared than you, then.
Aha! Suck a dick.
So here it is. Bald Nate McLean. I don't know this person.
Yeah, I know Bald Knight. Hi, okay. Bald Knight.
He says that the worst movie he saw in theaters, and I think he's being a little provocative here, the first Batman. And we clarified because we weren't sure if he was talking about the 1960s, like, Adam West thing, or the first Tim Burton Batman movie, and he says the first Tim Burton Batman movie.
Well, I had a feeling, because he's not, I don't think he's old enough to see Batman, the Adam West Batman in theaters, so, but right. I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't, like, a revival screening or something.
Yeah, or even just, like, you know how, like, the real theater would had access to old reels of God knows what, and they would just show them on Saturdays?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bald Knight says Tim Burton's Batman is the worst movie he's seen in theaters.
So how old is Bald Knight?
He's like our age.
Okay, that's interesting.
He might be. I think he's a little older, but.
Oh, okay. Well, so there's something kind of going on with the Tim Burton Batman movies now, and it's usually with people who are younger, who I would say are like 25 and under, where they didn't grow up with it. They didn't live in an age where those were the only superhero movies at all.
But the question is, what's the worst movie you've seen in theaters? So to me, right, that indicates like a visceral theater going experience of fuck this shit.
Right, right.
So I don't think you can justify that with, you know, millennial, well, it's not The Dark Knight, whateverness.
No, yeah. There are some people who legitimately just don't like Tim Burton's style or whatever it is. So I have an affinity for those movies, but I also know that a lot of that's nostalgia and because I am the age that I am.
Yeah, and I mean, is it the best Batman movie? Clearly not. We've had better interpretations of Batman since.
I'd still say it's in the top three.
Well, you would. But clearly Bald Knight disagrees.
Clearly. Underneath him, John Murillo, old friend of ours, he says Borat. So what a piece of shit that was.
that made me laugh.
My reading or the comment itself?
Just the way he phrased it. Just like I just heard his voice, Borat, what a piece of shit that was. So far I don't feel it. None of these movies have been the worst to me. I actually enjoy both of these movies.
I do too. I think Borat is borderline transgressive and actually like really subversive and cool.
Yeah.
Funny. Okay. I think it's super funny, but
I can see how Borat can be divisive.
Comedy in general is probably one of the more subjective genres.
Yeah, like it's either your sense of humor or it's not.
Just isn't. Yeah. And if you're not in on that joke, if you don't get where he's coming from, like I could see it being super obnoxious.
And Borat is so dependent on you enjoy the gag, you enjoy the bit. It's not like other comedies where there's like a story to cling to.
Not as much, no.
No.
But here's a thing for me, too. And it's... I almost see this as like a critical failing on my part when it comes to comedy. I am such a sucker for the candid camera gag. Like all of those shows like Punked or Scare Tactics, which was my favorite.
Yeah, that was such a good... The Bigfoot episode was one of my favorites where there's like a guy in a Bigfoot suit just like genius. Shaking the trailer. Genius.
There were so many good ones.
There were.
The lady with the painting, I can't even. But there was... There was also the one, what was the, MTV had a lot of these at one point, the one where they would, Boiling Point, where they would get people to try and piss them off at like...
Well, that was celebrities, wasn't it?
No, I think that was just regular customers, but the longer they lasted without like losing their temper, they would give them like $10 every minute or something.
I think Dax Shepard came out of one of those.
He came out of a Punked.
Oh, okay.
So did BJ Novak.
Really? Well, to me, Punked was sort of like the. It's weird to me that Punked became sort of the most famous of those because I always thought it was one of the lesser ones, but even it had its moments. No, I agree with you. There's something funny about the like people just reacting when they don't think anyone's watching. Like, just honest reactions are funny.
Even, like, I was never really a big fan of Jackass. Like, that's one of those, like, cultural my age things that I don't really get. Mm-hmm. But when they would veer into that territory of the candid camera thing, it would hit my funny bone.
No, I agree. I have some caveats, though. Like, I don't like stuff that's just mean for the sake of mean. So if it's you know, if it's just like trying to make somebody look stupid or whatever, I'm not as into it. But yeah, stuff where it's
there's
like,
a bunch of like hacky YouTube people who like ruin people's lives and then call it a prank.
Or like it's an obvious setup, like you're specifically setting them up for one specific type of reaction I don't like. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's more open-ended and they can sort of hang themselves with their own rope, I enjoy that.
For sure. And I think Sacha Baron Cohen, in particular, is sort of a genius master at that.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree. I think I actually enjoy him more in that element than usually.
Well, because I think he has a little bit of kind of a socio-political edge on top of the goofiness and the character stuff. But anyway, let's move down this list. Matt Grigsby, a friend of the show. He's also a good friend of Richard's, who I've met in person. He said, and he's a comic book artist, too. I'm so a little bit surprised by this. He says his least favorite is The Spirit.
I kind of get
Frank
that.
The Frank Miller directed movie.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy The Spirit, but it really is just like him replicating as much of Sin City as he learned from like
being on the set of Sin City.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never actually, you know what? I've never seen it because it was one of those movies. There was like a handful of movies around that time. It was like that and Shoot 'Em Up and a few others where I could never get a full consensus on whether or not it was worth my time to see it. And I just never ended up seeing it.
To me, I mean, The Spirit is, it's definitely kind of diet Sin City. Mm-hmm. I remembered having fun with it. I kind of watched it like Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if that was filmed like Sin City. That filming technique, I do think, gets a little obnoxious with The Spirit, and it doesn't quite fit the way it does with Sin City because, you know, Sin City was like replicating panel by panel. The Spirit isn't exactly doing that. So there are times when it doesn't totally work, but I think it's a fun romp.
Okay. All right.
It's a decent. Did you like The Phantom?
The with Billy Zane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's kind of on the level of like The Phantom and
like,
The
I
Shadow.
Know The Phantom is like a terrible movie, but I love The Phantom.
Dude.
And I love its tagline even more. Smash evil.
In 2018, that means fuck evil.
Maybe that's what it meant too back then. And
who's the villain? Trent Williams? Treat Williams?
I don't remember. I think Christy Swanson plays the girl.
Huh?
Christy Swanson plays the female lead in the movie.
Buffy, Catherine Zeta-Jones is like a femme fatale.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
But the villain for her is honestly, even though it's kind of a shit movie, the villain, I think, goes down in one of my favorite, like, just hamming it the fuck up performances of all time.
There were a lot of those back then, especially in that type of movie.
But that one is, in particular, stands out. He is just, like, owning it.
He knows what kind of movie he's in.
Yeah, so to me, The Spirit is kind of in the spirit, see what I did there, of those sort of movies, but filmed like Sin City.
All right, Tiffany Briscoe, maybe I shouldn't be saying the last names of these people.
It's on Facebook, that means it's public record, right?
Sure.
She goes by Fief.
Speed Racer, and I'm assuming she means the Wachowski Speed Racer. This is a really interesting movie because this is a love it or hate it. I hate this movie. Now,
I never saw it.
I've never seen it. Like, I've never like sat down and watched it as a movie, like with the intentions of watching it. This was playing almost on repeat when I started working at the video store. And it is the exact kind of annoying that you don't want for that type of experience.
It's just like, you can't ignore it kind of thing.
Yeah, it's super loud. It's super garish and obnoxious. The soundtrack is huge. It's hyper and on a candy high. Everything I'm saying about it is what the people who love it, love it. And it is kind of like a legit cult film now.
Wasn't this sort of the first in the many missteps of
the Wachowskis?
Taylor Kitsch?
No, that wasn't Taylor Kitsch in the movie. That was Emil, who was in Girl Next Door.
Oh, yeah. He's
Emil Hirsch.
He's who Hollywood replaced with Taylor Kitsch.
Kind of, yeah. Well, Emil Hirsch, he's had troubles. And Matthew Fox played Eraser X.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't care for that movie, so I could see why somebody would think it was awful. But like I said, it has a legit cult following now, and a lot of people who I respect in the realm of like film criticism really hold that movie up now. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Right.
I never saw it. Next, our friend Cade Brown says, Timeline.
Yes, and we were there during that experience. This was high school.
Yeah, right, this is such a fun movie to see with a group of high school kids who did not give a fuck, but I'm sure that we ruined that movie for anyone else who was there.
And we took up a whole row. We were pretty much near the front of the theater, and we had no intentions to go to the theater to see this movie. We were bored, looked up at the screen, said, well, it's either Timeline or Master and Commander. Timeline shorter. Let's go see that, and not knowing anything about it.
In retrospect, the frame of mind we were in, Timeline was 100% the right decision, though.
100%, yeah. And I believe, if I'm not wrong, Timeline is directed by Richard Donner.
I don't know. All I remember is Timeline is based on a Michael Crichton book.
Yeah, and this was a lot like what was happening to Michael Crichton adaptations post the first Jurassic Park.
Yeah. He hit big, so we're going to Stephen King him.
Yeah.
And just buy up every property he has and
scrape the bottom of that barrel.
Okay, in all fairness, the 13th Warrior is balla as fuck.
A 13th Warrior is another film that nobody talks about except for the people who always talk about it. I enjoy the 13th Warrior a great deal.
Yeah. 13th Warrior is awesome.
Timeline not so much.
Not. No. It's in fact so bad I completely forgot about it until Cade mentioned it. And then I went, oh yeah, that piece of shit.
Really early performances by Paul Walker and Gerard Butler. It's like a time travel thing. It takes place in medieval times.
Remember Super Gerard boring. Butler?
Yeah,
I remember Paul Walker.
He was the something in that movie.
Oh man.
Anyway, so there's that. What's the next one?
The last one finally is Jackie Wally, and she says, Man of Steel, basically anything by Zack Snyder, which I said Man of Steel more than Batman v Superman. And she said she didn't even bother with Batman v Superman. If it's Zack Snyder, I don't waste my time or money. So she learned her lesson early.
Yes, she did. And I would say she seems to be a lot harder on the snide than her husband, Richard, who used to be the co-host of this podcast, who was I wouldn't say a full-on Zack Snyder apologist, but certainly more than I am.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know Richard. He likes action. He likes violence.
That's something
Zack Snyder can usually at least pull off some decent set pieces, even if you're not a fan of his slow motion technique. I can see how I can see how Zack Snyder garnered some goodwill based off of 300 and his remake of
Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, that's been it for me.
I blame the success or the adoration of the remake of Dawn of the Dead solely on the screenplay by James Gunn. And I actually didn't hate Man of Steel. I hate the last third of Man of Steel. And retroactively, everything in his version of the DCU that's come out has just made Man of Steel, like, all the more...
It's not good enough to support what the DCU's become. That's for sure.
But it's not even close to my least favorite Zack Snyder movie. Sucker Punch, however, probably would be in the top three or four worst movies I've seen in the theater.
Okay. All right.
That's a piece of shit.
Batman v Superman was definitely on my list because...
But here's the thing with Batman v Superman. I knew it was going to be terrible going in. And you always want to go in with an open mind, especially if I'm going to be reviewing something, hope for the best. But nothing about its trailers, nothing about the movies that came before it, nothing at all about any of the news coming forth led me to believe that it could be good. And it's like the Trump presidency. Everything that I thought was going to happen is happening, and it's proving my worst fears every day. And that's what Batman v Superman was.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, I was like, maybe...
Whereas Sucker Punch was, like, actually a literal sucker punch to my stomach. Because I had a little bit of goodwill for Zack Snyder. Like, at the time, I was still sort of a 300 apologist. His Owl movie was, like, cool,
The I Guardians guess. Of Gahool?
Sure. It was fine. I had seen more movies by him that I liked than disliked at that point, and then that movie was like, oh no, you really suck.
Well, that was like Zack Snyder Unleashed. That was like the moment when it became clear that he's a hack.
Yeah. Because that was like something he wrote. That was like a passion project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any others that... I mean, you've seen a lot of movies in theaters.
Right, and there's so much low-hanging fruit. Like, I could say, like, some, like, bad Gerard Butler romantic comedy or something like that that I ended up seeing and forgot 3 days later.
Have you ever walked out of a movie?
Because it was so bad?
Yeah. Have you ever just given up and been like, no, I don't want to spend my time on this?
No, the last movie I can think of where I walked out, but it wasn't because the movie was bad. It was because I was just, like, not in it. It was like such in a bad mood. There was no way I could get into the movie, and because it was kind of like heavy, and like I just wasn't feeling it. And I was also like, I was like, there was things about like the projection and stuff that was bugging me. So I think I planned on coming back, but I never did. And it was August Osage County, which again, there was like, it's probably fine, but I was just like in this terrible mood, and it was like 20 minutes in, I was just like, I'm just gonna come back to this later.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me.
I never did, but...
I feel like you sort of have to be in the right frame of mind for, you know, a moody family drama like that.
Right, yeah. And so that's the only thing I can think of off the top of my head. There have been times when I had to leave because, like, the movie broke or something like that.
So when I was younger, I went to the movies with my family, and we went and saw Monkey Bone.
The Henry Selick film.
The one with Brendan Fraser and the weird stop-motion monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And we were watching it, and there was some projection issues. And it, like, started to eat halfway through, and they were like, you know, just give us a minute to fix this. The projector broke or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like, we're good. Like, we've seen all of this that we need to see.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were like a solid 20 minutes, 45 minutes into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like trying to rewatch it later, like just being like, you know, maybe it was just sort of weird because I was with my family and they just weren't into the humor of it. It's just not, there's just not really anything there.
Well, it's not like it's a movie that a lot of people talk about anymore.
No, it's sort of like a really dumbed down version of Cool World.
Mm-hmm.
So with that's
Brendan
one
Fraser and a monkey.
So I think that's the only movie that I've ever left. But it wasn't like we just like stormed out of because it was so bad. It was just like, no, we're not going to give this more time to disappoint us.
I think I saw, I mean, I can think off the top of my head, like stuff that I like was felt physically bothered by as I was watching it because I was just so bored or so annoyed. And you know, Transformers 2, I mean, that's going to go down as one of the worst movie going experiences of my life. It's really tough to beat. It is sort of a standard of, is this movie as bad as Transformers 2? And then also Grown Ups, the first Grown Ups. And that was another one where I wasn't expecting it to be as bad as it was. Like, I knew it was going to be probably be cheesy or something, but I didn't know it was going to be like one of the worst movies I was ever going to see. And I've heard the second one's worse. I didn't bother going back to that well.
Okay.
But again, I feel like both of those are sort of low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, I have two more, and then we can move on. Real quick, if you haven't heard our review of Girl on the Train, that was the first episode that yeah. I like started as the co-host for.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost like made me rethink doing this because I hated it so bad. I was like, I don't know if I can do that every week.
Right.
I hate that movie. I think it's I did not work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. What's her name?
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt, I think, is really talented, really great actress. But her performance alone of like, I'm so drunk, I'm a girl on the train, blah, 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 is just so bad that and that movie isn't good enough on its own to defend that. But it's just, I mean, that's like, to me, it was like Razzie bad. It's when bad performances happen to good actresses.
Yeah. And everyone involved was sincerely thought they were making a good movie.
Yeah. And yeah. I love me some Justin Theroux, too.
Yeah, he was in that. I didn't hate it nearly as much as you did. I thought it was, like, cheesy airport fiction, but I didn't think that it was, like, an abomination. I just thought, like, this isn't very good.
Here's the thing. Are there worse movies? Of course. But it's just, like, the blandest, most unflavorful meal that you will ever eat.
Mm.
It's just... It's like... just pure calories, but calories you don't even want.
Empty calories. I always say the worst sin a movie can commit is to be boring.
Yeah, and I think this movie's really boring. So it's not even fun bad. It's just like, it's sin bad. and then finally, this last one was so bad that it couldn't even impress me as a kid. Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Yeah.
And I saw that at the Real Theater in Pocatello, and it was like sort of I was just like coming down from like peak Mortal Kombat age.
Right.
And it's just bad.
Yeah, I saw that at the Real as well, although in a different experience. I wasn't with you with that. But it was not good. No.
Like even from the moment when they recast Raiden, I'm like, all right. You couldn't afford Christopher Lambert?
Okay, let's move on from this. But that was fun.
Yeah.
So pay attention to our Facebook or our Twitter to see if we post any more questions like that. But let's go ahead and move on to the movie news.
Movie news. Talking about that movie news.
We'll start with this one, this first big story that came out today or within the last few days. Jake Gyllenhaal is going to play Mysterio in the sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming.
I believe you mean Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is cool. I'm generally more of a fan of Jake Gyllenhaal than not.
Yeah.
I think even when he's turning in a bad performance, it's an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I have enough confidence in Marvel as a studio to sort of get something interesting out of him. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought Mysterio would be a really cool cinematic villain. Like, he's sort of like Spider-Man's Scarecrow, but they can do even, I think, even more. Like, just the conceit of him being a movie special effects guy, I'm like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, that's sort of begging to be in a movie.
Right.
I think he's
a bit of a cheeseball villain as far as, like, you know, reading the comic shows, but I think he'd be very easily updatable.
I think he's become a bit of a cheeseball villain. He's become a bit of a punchline because his costume's kind of weird and dated.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, there hasn't been a really compelling Mysterio story in a while. He's sort of one of those villains that they throw into a Spider-Man story when he, like,
needs to be a red herring or something.
Yeah, when it's like the beginning of an adventure and he's just coming home from catching Mysterio or whatever. He's sort of become a bit of a limp dick villain.
Right.
But I think, yeah, if we give him the full, you know, Michael Keaton Vulture treatment, because the Vulture was the same way.
Kind of, but I feel like there's like a little bit of reverence for the Vulture just because he was one of the first and stuff. And but yes, I think the cool thing you could do with Mysterio, and we'll see if they do this, I doubt it, is you could maybe get a little meta with him, because his whole thing is movies and special effects and stuff. So you could actually, like, say something about the medium while you're entertaining with the medium.
Sure. I mean, I don't want you to hope for too much, but I think at the end of the day, he will at least be cool to watch on screen.
Yeah, I think Jake Gyllenhaal is a great actor, and he's been on a run lately. He's like taking serious weird chances and, like, you know, stuff he's done with Denis Villeneuve and, like,
yeah.
I mean, he pretty much already was a Spider-Man villain in Nightcrawler.
Kind of. He was kind of chameleon-esque.
Yeah, you know, he's just a really convincing psychopath. I'm excited to see what he does with this material.
My big hesitancy is I feel good that they cast a star like Jake Gyllenhaal, but my big hesitancy is that they're gonna do what they always seem to do with Spider-Man and shove, you know, a billion villains.
17 villains in there, yeah.
Yeah, because I also heard rumors that Michael Keaton is returning as the Vulture, which I'm like, okay.
Don't.
Like, huh?
I'm like, don't, please.
Well, I mean, I think they could still do some interesting stuff, as, you know, if he's just sort of like a side character or whatever. Sure, but let's not Green Goblin him. Let's not.
Yeah.
Let's take the time and let this villain be, you know, as villainous as he can be. And I think could be really cool. But like I said, I think it's a good sign that they already cast someone as big as Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they're not going to spread the villain butter too thin.
Yes, agreed. Margot Robbie has been cast to play Sharon Tate in Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This is, you know, supposed to take time. Oh, slow clap. All right.
Yeah.
And there's also been more casting information on this, too, than just that.
I mean, here's the thing. Margot Robbie playing Sharon Tate, to me, is kind of a no-duh.
Yeah.
But it's...
She's the closest thing to a Sharon Tate we have now.
It's so good. I mean, it's just perfect. And I think she'll do really well with Quentin Tarantino's material. She just sort of, like, I don't know, like, after her cameo in The Big Short and just her performance of Wolf of Wall Street, I can see her. I'm totally into this. I'm into this movie. I think.
Yeah, what I hope it is, and, you know, Timothy Oliphant was also rumored to be in it, as well as Leonardo DiCaprio, Tim Roth, Burt Reynolds. So this is, like, shaping it, Kurt Russell. This is shaping up to be, like, a, you know, a big Tarantinian cast. And what I hope it is I hope it's not just about the murder, the Manson murders.
I mean, Tarantino has said it's more of, like, about that year, if anything.
Yeah.
It's more of a 60s movie than a Charles Manson movie.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see him working in sort of a more contemporary time again. I've liked his historical pieces just fine, but I feel like he's a better fit for, you know, gangsterhoods in the modern era.
I kind of miss that
from him, and we'll see if that's what we get here. But I feel like inevitably we're kind of going to get that feel just because of the decade it's in.
I mean, I don't want to see him sort of. I don't want to see him sort of fall on old tricks.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense, but because I really have a place in my heart for all of his movies. But I so far, just based off the casting and the what I've heard, I'm like, yeah, this sounds like it's puzzle pieces lining up perfectly.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and get into Deadpool 2. And I'll let you describe this movie. What happens in Deadpool 2?
We've got the titular Deadpool, this mercenary mutant assassin who can't die. And it picks up with him just being the merc with a mouth, mm-hmm. taking on assassins and killing people, and just generally being a contract killer with superpowers and a foul mouth.
Uh-huh.
And then at the very beginning, so I don't think this is a spoiler, but this whole review might have some spoilers, so be wary. His girlfriend gets murdered.
Mm-hmm. Marina Baccarin, who was introduced in the first one.
Yeah, she gets murdered. He gets super depressed, sort of is having a crisis of self. He can't kill himself, so he doesn't really know what to do with his life. Through some misadventures, ends up with the X-Men, mm-hmm. and finding this wayward young mutant who is going down the dark path of revenge. He sees maybe he still has some purpose. So he is on a quest to sort of redeem this kid, except a time traveling other assassin named Cable comes back into Deadpool's time, because this child, after he goes down the dark path, becomes a super killer, kills Cable's family. So it's sort of a Terminator situation.
Very much so. I would say that the movie's quite aware of that too.
Yeah.
This is directed by David Leitch, who came aboard when the previous director. Apparently, there was some issues between him and Ryan Reynolds and the future of this franchise. And there was kind of a lot of chatter about that. Although, and maybe you disagree with me, I would say the transition is pretty seamless. Does this feel like a wildly different take?
Wildly different? No. But I can definitely feel some differences. And honestly, I think they're for the better.
I do, too. Can I just say this right off the bat, and then we can get into specifics?
Sure.
I think I like this one more.
I liked this one so much more.
And I was hearing, I've weirdly been hearing very little about it. Like, I know everyone's seeing it, but yeah. Nobody's, like, there's not a lot of talk about it online. Nobody's, like, quoting it or posting memes. It doesn't seem as big of an event as it did last time.
Well, so I think there's a couple things going mm-hmm. on with that, because I kind of agree with you. I think first and foremost, it's not as shocking because in general, I think the humor is less. I mean, there's still definitely some potty humor and some blue humor, but mm-hmm. I think it's fewer and far between. And
not
I
as
think,
punchy.
Yeah. I think sort of the shock value of, oh my God, I can't believe they're making a Deadpool movie. Is and it's hard R. I think that shock value's died down a little bit.
Yeah.
Two, the cultural zeitgeist as far as comic book movies is still pretty hot on the heels of Infinity War. I mean, Deadpool won the weekend,
mm-hmm.
But you know, if we're talking like epic, oh my gosh, moments,
yeah,
you know, this just this just doesn't have as many of them. So if we're comparing it to comic book movies as a whole, you know, it doesn't...
It's a little minor in comparison.
But I think that's all for the benefit of this movie.
For sure.
I think this movie... I actually think it's funnier than the first one. Because I think the laughs are a little more well-earned to me. There are some moments that I was like, that totally caught me off guard because the marketing for this movie was fucking amazing.
Yeah, they did a really good job of not giving away what the movie was.
Exactly. Not only not giving away, but in some cases directly trolling the audience.
Sure.
Because there's footage in the trailers that is not in the movies, and that's very intentional.
Okay.
And just in general, I think it feels like it's of the world of the X-Men comics a lot more than the first one does. A lot more than a lot of the X-Men movies
That was one of my biggest takeaways. I was like, you know, this is from Deadpool's perspective, and it's all postmodern and silly and whatever. But this feels more like reading an X-Men comic than I would say any X-Men movie except for maybe the second one.
I would disagree. I would say like second one and like Days of Future Past and Logan. But
yeah,
like those are
the best.
And those are all very specific takes. This just feels sort of like of their universe, of their sort of daily lives.
Yeah, it kind of gets that, like, the little bit of X-Men stuff we see in this movie, and even, like, when they introduce X-Force, kind of. That stuff feels more like something you would read in the comics. Like, it has that sort of lived-in world.
Yeah. And that, what I love about it is it doesn't take the time to explain any
everything.
Because it's like, there's already all these movies we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just lets us sort of live in this assumed universe.
Right. And there's a lot of X-Men stuff in here, even though it's Deadpool. There's a lot of stuff about mutants. There's a lot of stuff about civil rights and the LGBT metaphors with mutants and, you know, and bigotry and all of that stuff. All of that stuff is actually in here and probably played strangely enough more sincerely than it has in other X-Men movies, at least recently.
Yeah, I was all about this movie. I thought it was it's really funny. It's got some great action. It's got some great set pieces. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's a particular sequence that might have made me laugh harder than anything I've seen in a theater in a good long time.
Okay. I mean, there's a few in this movie that I think
there's
are really...
There's one in particular.
Is it the skydiving sequence?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's a... And what I like that is that's... It's a... They build to that joke for a long time.
Yeah.
They really built that into the movie.
It's sort of... To me, it's a little unparalleled.
As far as, like, jokes in movies or jokes in comic book movies?
All of the above. Like, just the amount of time and preparation and building towards
to a gag. Yeah. Yeah.
To one dedicated gag that just... And here's the thing.
There's a good stretch in that movie, especially with the X-Force stuff, that's a little Mystery Men-ish, and I mean that in a good way.
Yes. No, I agree. It's... I loved all of that stuff. And I think it could take some people aback, especially, you know, some comic book fans. I could see how they could be a little disappointed by certain things.
Sure.
But there's all... Okay.
You know what, though? I haven't sat in a comic book movie and, like, geeked on something in a while. Like, be like, oh, my God, they're doing this. Like, they're actually doing this. Because we get 100,000 comic book movies a year. And
I know. Yeah,
of course they are. But when Cable was doing Cable shit, I was like, I was 7 years old. And I was like, I've been wanting to see Cable in a movie.
Yeah.
For who knows how long. And they're actually doing it and doing it really well.
And doing it justice. And not... over explaining it, not over doing it, just letting him be the time traveling
like
cyborg
just
badass.
Out of
he is.
The 90s X-Men cartoon into a movie.
Yeah.
And Josh Brolin, who's been having a hell of a fucking year.
Yeah, right?
Because, you know, he's also going to be in the Sicario sequel here coming up, and he's just, you know, he was just Thanos. And he does a really good job. And him and Ryan Reynolds have really good comedic chemistry and with
here's the thing.
Cable as the straight man.
The story works with all of this craziness going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my biggest fear going into it, is that they're going to sort of overdo it with
sequelitis.
Yeah, with sequelitis and nods and stuff. And it really does all sort of hinge on how well Cable and Deadpool play off of each other. And to me, that works.
Well, there's also, and you mentioned story. I think that was probably my biggest beef with the first one. It was like, it's funny. It has some cool action.
Yeah, but it's very
action.
Much like origin story. Like,
it's origin story 101, and it knows it is, and it's sort of trying to play on that, but at the same time, it's no less simple.
Yeah.
Less kind of rudimentary when you get to the nuts and bolts of it. And honestly, there's a lot about, like, the first one that if you strip away the gimmick, if you strip away the nonlinear storytelling, the meta jokes, and even just the humor, if you just look at it as, like, this happens, and this happens, and this happens, the first one would be kind of a boring movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas this one, you could strip away the meta stuff, you could strip away the humor, you could strip away all the stuff that makes it idiosyncratic, and it still works as, like, a captivating story about a hero and a villain.
Yeah, and it also has... another thing I really like about it is the third act, the climax, isn't... I think comic book movies work best when they're sort of morality struggles, when it's all about a character's fate versus the fate of the world.
Right.
And so, you know, to me, the ending is really effective. And, oh, fuck. Okay, well, there's a couple things I have to say. First of all, with the thing with X-Force, it's really smart. Because even though they have this build up to all of that, there is one huge clue as to what's going to go down. And I didn't catch it. There's a very specific character that sort of gives it away.
Right. Are you talking about Steve or Dave or whatever his name was?
Peter? No, I'm talking about Zeitgeist. I think it's really smart that they included this character, but I can't explain why without getting super spoilery.
Okay, well, we'll just say that it was really smart, and you can tell me off air.
Okay. it was really smart, and if anyone wants to know more or has seen the movie, hit me up for some, you know, hit me up on Twitter or Facebook, and I'll tell you why it was super smart. But also, to me, this is kind of a spoiler, because I didn't expect this was going to happen, but the fucking Juggernaut.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. So cool.
And done really well. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And done with a purpose.
Yeah. And again, it also echoes the comic books really well. So there's this character in there, Jail, Black Tom Cassidy, and there's a few jokes about him.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is this kid, the sort of crux of the story, the Mr. MacGuffin. Ends up playing sort of the role that Black Tom Cassidy played in the comic books. So again, like, they're very specific on the characters they're including in the story, which to me, as a comic book fan, that's really exciting. It's not just we're picking Pixie because we're running out of X-Men to choose. It's like they have story purposes and hidden layers between why they're picking these characters.
Right. No, I agree. I agree with that completely.
Yeah. I
will say, I think if you're just going laugh for laugh, I think the first one probably is, a little punchier, a little smarter in some ways. As far as just the gags go. The meta stuff, the talk to the camera stuff, some of the dialogue. I think it's a little sharper in the first one. I think there's some attempts at the same thing here that feels a little less...
feels a little bit more writer's room, a little more punched up. Like, there's like, 7 jokes about dubstep that are super dated.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I don't know. I in general...
But the jokes that are more integrated in the actual story, like the one we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
The stuff that's a little bit more character-driven or story-driven, those jokes work really well and I think are better. But if we're just talking about, like, as a comedy and, like, how the dialogue's working and that kind of stuff, I think probably the first one is a little bit more tasteful. But it's not too far off. I'm going to say generally, if you were a fan of the first one, I don't know why you wouldn't be a fan of this one. And I'm going to say if you're a comic book fan who actually liked Deadpool before it was a meme or a billboard,
yeah,
you're going to appreciate this one more.
Yes, 100%. The only reason I can see... I can see one thing kind of pissing off fans, but... I say, learn to laugh. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Like,
this is all irreverent. It's all kind of sending up your favorite thing.
Yeah. So yeah. I think if that bothers you, then maybe you should reevaluate why you like Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just.
But this is also like a fun ensemble. There was a lot of characters in the first one too, but it really was kind of the Ryan Reynolds show. This one, I felt like it was a much more give and take between the whole cast,
which is a little surprising to me. I thought I thought this might be a little more heavy handed with Ryan Reynolds because of the success of the first one.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was such a good X movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just really tickled me.
Agreed.
All of the hype about Deadpool 1, I feel about this Deadpool.
Yeah, if this had been the first one, if this is the movie that came out last year, or whatever it was, 2 years ago,
yeah,
I would have, like, got it a little bit more. I would have got, like, the hype.
Yeah, and I think the first one's good. I just think it's a little overrated. This one, I think, might be a little underrated.
Agreed.
Do you want to letter grade it?
Oh, should we? I'm going to give it an enthusiastic B+.
All right. So I'm going to give it an A-.
All right. Okay. Let's go ahead and move into our Netflix homework now, which was Masterminds. You assigned this to me last week.
Mm-hmm.
And this is directed by Jared Hess. This came out in 2016. Based on a true story. Of course, how true is debatable. Stars Zach Galifianakis, Kristen Wiig, Owen Wilson, Jason Sudeikis is in there later on. Kate McKinnon has a fun cameo. It's about a tale as old as time. Doofus gets tricked into doing a robbery for a girl. He's on the lam in Mexico while the FBI is after him. And Owen Wilson, who is the guy for whom he was doing the robbery for, is living it up.
Way to say that. Sorry.
Is living it up with the stolen millions of dollars. Zach Galifianakis, I should say, was a driver that transported monies from different banks, which is why he had the access to be able to steal all of this money. But he was an idiot and left a security tape and gave himself away. And so there's kind of a big hot pursuit and who's going to discover who first. It's a little bit, this reminds me a whole lot of that movie, the Steven Soderbergh movie, Logan Lucky, through the lens of There's Something About Mary.
I think you're being far too
generous. Well, okay. Attempts at both of those things. Yeah, I want to say this is probably Jared Hess's first, like, for-hire gig, because he didn't write this movie, and it stars a whole lot of SNL cast people.
Yeah. I don't know if even all of them were cast at the time, like, Leslie Jones is in it.
2016? Yeah, she was in SNL by 2016.
Yeah, sure. I guess so. She's been there for a few years now.
Yeah.
Kate McKinnon,
yeah,
Kristen Wiig, Jason Sudeikis, yeah, real,
Ken Marino's in there, like, barely.
Yeah, but he wasn't an SNL alum.
No, but he's, you know, he's in that kind of comedy world.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a movie.
I think this movie's a big old piece of shit. I think it's a giant turd. I really did not care for it almost at all. I almost started to, I did enjoy Jason Sudeikis.
I liked think his he's part. The standout in the movie for sure.
Yeah, and I started to forgive the movie a little more, and there's a little bit of a B story there with him. That I found,
even though he's giving me like big time Matt Dillon, There's Something About Mary vibes.
Sure.
But
I found him bemusing.
Mm-hmm.
But most of this movie is, I think, very dumb and very unfunny. Which is strange to me because it has a lot of very funny, very smart people in it.
Yeah. I found myself asking myself throughout it, do the people in this movie know how bad it is?
Like, I think so.
Do they know they're slumming it here, or do they think they're doing good work?
Okay, so here's the thing. I think there's a couple things going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing is that it is a true story that pays zero respect to the actual story.
It's at best a jumping off point for whatever this is.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a true story till the very end when they do like the sort of catch up with the characters, and I was
they say at the beginning they're based on a true story, but
did they? I thought I missed that, or I thought it was a joke. Because I didn't know that till the very end. I was like, wait, what the fuck? So I think there's way too much sacrificing of character for dumb gags. Ooh. And I think everyone is way too dumb for it to work. Like, you know, if Zach Galifianakis is playing his, you know, sort of typical lispy idiot boy, that's fine. But I don't believe that any of the other characters are smart enough to really outsmart him, if that's the case.
Right.
Because the movie has zero respect for its characters.
Mm-hmm.
And is not afraid, like Jared Hess is not afraid to sell out any of them instantly for what he thinks is the funniest thing at the moment, and almost none of it is.
Agreed.
The second thing is we have a bunch of sketch comedians who I feel like were sort of treating their characters more as like sketch characters, which I don't think mm-hmm. translates to this longer story.
No, I definitely agree with that. Every scene they're kind of treating as a mini sketch.
Yeah, and they're like hamming it up, but it's like, okay, well, what's the point of this scene? What's the point of your character? Like Kate McKinnon's character, I did think the gag with them taking the engagement photos at the beginning was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. I think I know what you're going to say about her. I can't get a handle on her. And this was almost, I know like I'm in the minority on this, but this is almost my beef I had with her in the Ghostbusters movie. She's doing something, but to no effect. It's not in harmony with the movie. She's just kind of like being spun in circles and then pushed out on in front of the camera.
Yes, I think Kate McKinnon is one of the best sketch actors, mm-hmm. one of the best sketch actors of any generation. I don't think she or any director has figured out how to effectively
translate her
to a feature length film yet.
Yeah, and I would almost say, like, if you were to tell me before I've seen this movie, she's going to be in a Jared Hess film, I would say, oh, that kind of makes sense, because he's largely known for character stuff. And he isn't so much into, like, really super written telegraph jokes, except for here. He's more into these weird, off-kilter performances and moments and idiosyncrasies from his actors.
Yeah, and all of that just felt so forced and heavy-handed in this.
I think it... I think it's a bad combination of his obsessions as a director when it comes to character and this super, super, super pedestrian screenplay that is trying to telegraph very traditional, like, Farrelly Brothers style jokes.
Here's the thing. Anything you need to know about this movie, you can figure out from the sequence where Zach Galifianakis first goes to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene where he's like dangling hot dogs for a very CGI'd eel, which attacks him.
Mm-hmm.
And then later is in a swimming pool and very CGI diarrhea's in the swimming pool.
And it's, okay. Can I like ruin whatever this is right now?
No.
I kind of laughed at this movie more than I thought I would.
What?
And I'll be the first to admit this is terrible. This is not a good movie. This is not a good comedy. But I would say that I would laugh at a joke and then immediately after would roll my eyes and go, oh, come on, to the next joke. And it was that way almost throughout. And I think it's because of what I just said. It's like, the moments that I find myself laughing at was something like when him and Kristen Wiig are in the car and he has the snake eyes in.
Okay.
And he leans in to kiss her and he just looks like a complete alien. It's just, that's the weird kind of thing that I think Jared Hess knows how to do really well.
But here's the thing. I'm going to disagree with you on the fact
that... I'm not defending the movie at all. I think it's terrible. I'm just saying there were... There's a type of dumbness in this movie that I'm kind of like, okay, I can kind of get on board with how stupid this is.
Here's the thing, though. I think the snake...
Even though it's all a wasted opportunity.
Yeah. I think, like, the snake eyes bit, right? I agree. That was actually a kind of funny moment. I think it would have been that much more funny if Kristen Wiig was playing it relatively straight. But she's playing such a dumbass herself that I'm like, I could see her doing the exact same thing. Like, they make everyone such a dumbass goofball that the nobody is a foil for anybody's humor. And so what it turns into is a bunch of crazy characters in a crazy world doing dumb shit. And to me, I found most of it to be basically anti-comedy. I was like, again, another very typical moment is when they're at the gun range at the very beginning and he puts a gun in his pants and
shoots his butt. There's like six butthole jokes in this movie.
I think there's more than that. You're being generous.
I mean, there's almost as many butthole jokes in this as there was dubstep jokes in Deadpool 2.
I think there's more butthole jokes in this. I think if anyone, if Jared Hess had managed to make anyone play it a little straight,
but that's not what he does. Like, he doesn't, like, and I'm not saying this is a defense of the movie. I'm going to kind of
disagree with you. So, like, take Napoleon Dynamite, for instance, right? They're goofballs, but they feel like they could be real goofballs. To me, this is like broad.
He's pretty arch.
These are like broad caricatures of what he might direct in another movie.
Yeah.
I just, to me, none of the characters felt real enough at all to make anything feel like it mattered. It just felt like dumb joke after dumb joke.
Yeah,
and you're right. There were some that caught me a little more off guard than I expected.
But if I watch like a bad Adam Sandler movie, the broken clock is right twice a day or something like that. That expression,
yeah.
Where every once in a while, just for sheer probability for how many jokes they're trying to stuff in the movie, every once in a while something works.
Yeah, but, like in this movie, there were a total of three things I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the engagement photos at the beginning, the snake eyes bit, and the moment when Jason Sudeikis tricked himself.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I think Jason Sudeikis is kind of having fun in this movie in general. And
sure.
It's not the type of thing we normally see from him. And there's a few moments with him that I think that are pretty funny, but not because the movie's doing him any favors.
In general, I thought that I thought that that story was the most interesting to me. Like, I would have watched a whole movie about this assassin who got tricked into not killing a guy. To me, there was way more going on there. And again, I didn't realize this was based on a true story. It just felt like it. After learning that, I was like, oh, okay. I can't believe anyone whose story this was signed on for this movie, because clearly there is zero respect for anyone involved.
Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, I don't think it's even a matter of respect. I think it's just a complete disregard for whatever the reality of this thing was.
I think it is a matter of respect. I think you can have a dumb character, but still respect the character. And not just make it the butt of all the jokes. There's like nothing feels really honest to me in this movie or earned. It's just dumb butthole joke after dumb butthole joke.
No, agreed. This is a bad movie. I would give it like a D, but I'm not gonna lie, it did make me laugh every once in a while.
All right.
But I think only just because of the talent involved by the actors.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. And I just and that's what I think, what is sort of frustrating is I think this could have been a pretty good movie in maybe a different director and different writer's hands.
But even as like a genre or whatever, this is sort of tired, like this kind of comedy. And I've seen it done better elsewhere. Logan Lucky being one of them. Something About Mary kind of has a lot of this stuff.
The
Richard Linklater movie Bernie, which I think is doing this kind of true story, truth is stranger than fiction kind of movie a whole lot better.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, I feel like there is a place for this type of movie in that canon. I think that this movie just executed it so poorly that there's no reason to really, it's not worth it. No. But, you know, if it had been a tighter script and a director with a little bit more patience, I think it could have been at least entertaining, you know, like at least a TNT Sunday afternoon. Oh, okay. I'll catch the end of this. Whereas right now it's just, I think, really bad.
Yeah.
And kind of anti-humor.
Okay. Next week, I'm going to have us watch the Korean zombie movie, Train to Busan.
Oh, I've seen that.
Oh, you have?
No. Okay. Of course not.
I mean, it's conceivable. I don't know.
No, it's not.
I know Richard's seen it.
That's cute that you think that.
Yes, I've heard good things. So I'm excited to see this. I just saw that it's on Netflix, so we'll do that. And if anybody has anything to say about any of the topics that we brought up in this episode, you can contact us through our email at jabberandrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, like
slide
I said.
Slide into those DMs for Deadpool spoilers.
Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast, at our Twitter at jabberpodcast. Also, we're not as active as we probably should be, but we're also on Instagram at Jabber Podcast. You can find me at VC Cassidy. You can also find the movie reviews that I write weekly at the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. And you can find Keith where?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. You can find me on Facebook. I have a shitload of shows coming up this week, so check some of these out. I'm going to be at the Madhouse Comedy Club at the 7:30 and 9:45 shows, Friday and Saturday. So that's four shows this weekend. And then I have Madhouse Comedy Club. 7:30, 9:45, Friday, Saturday, May 25th and 26th, if you're listening to this late. That might be tomorrow. And then Monday, Memorial Day, I'm going to be at the Comedy Palace doing a San Diego Comedy Festival Memorial Day show with headliner Eric Knowles. That is at 7.
Okay.
That should be a pretty good show. Eric Knowles is on tonight in San Diego. He's a funny dude. And then on Thursday, May 31st, at the 9 p.m. show, I'm going to be at the Comedy Palace for the San Diego Comedy Festival.
Okay.
And then one more. June 8th, I'm going to be at Derby's Bar and Grill at Hemet, California for a Justin Comedy show. So that'll be June 8th at 8 p.m. You can go to my website, www.keithfosterkid.com, to keep up with my show dates. It's like a whole little mini San Diego tour.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, I'm calling it the I'm Proving I Can Be Busy Too tour.
All right. You can find the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Player.fm, Google Play, Pocket Cast, and the Windows Podcast Network. And be sure to listen to our friends out there who are also doing podcasts of their own, including Rod and Denise / Rod and Moksha / Rod and Guest at The Listening Party. And Patrick and his father over at Make Dad Read Comics, and Patrick and Dennis over at Almost Educational. And Patrick and me, we're going to have an episode coming out here, probably dropping the same day this drops, over on Almost Educational, where I talk about what made YouTube toxic. Bill and Brian over at the Great Albums Podcast, and Mike Fallick over at Let's Start a Cult, and Buddy.
Which is now the group.
They changed their name, didn't they?
Yeah, it's now Hack Thought.
Okay.
It's Hack Thought subtitle Let's Start a Cult podcast.
Okay. And Buddy and Alice over at Those Happy Places.
Yeah, also check out our friends Adam Connie at the Adamant Podcast, and Bo and Merrill at Campfire Shit Show, Campfire SHT Show.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's it.
Yeah, is that the show?
That's the show.
All right. This week's sign off is Maximum Effort.
I don't know what that means.
It's a Deadpool thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, I feel like that didn't really land. So, chimichangas.
Bye.